Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Let's Talk Kashrus, presented by the Kashrus Awareness Project in conjunction with Torah Anytime. Today, I am privileged to be joined by Rabbi Mordechai Starashevsky, Rabbinic Coordinator at the Orthodox Union. Thank you, Rabbi Starashevsky, for joining us once again.
Good to be here, Yitzchak. Thank you.
We'd like to discuss today the topic of retorts. It has tremendous ramifications in the field of kashrus. For those of us who have never been to one of these large factories, we may not have seen a retort, we may not even know what it is. Tell us what it is, and then we'll talk about the halachic details.
So there's different types of retorts. Let's talk about first the purpose of a retort. A retort is, there's two ways of cooking food. Food has to be cooked, obviously. Some food is not edible without cooking, but a lot of food has to be cooked as a preservative to make sure it's shelf stable, to make sure that the bacteria, the pathogens have been killed. So the cooking process. A lot of times that cooking process is done in a retort. A retort is a steam cooker, which means that it's not under pressure because steam is, by definition, is under pressure. There's different types of retorts. They're all the same principle. It's cooked with steam if under pressure. The most common retort you'll find is a batch retort, which means that these cans, or you can have fruit cups, they're loaded, they're sealed. But the point is that the product is already sealed.
Like canned vegetables, canned fruits.
Right.
The can already done, goes into this chamber.
Called a retort. It looks like if anybody ever saw like a picture of a World War II type of submarine, you know, like a long tube, you put the torpedo in. So that's looks like that, this round tube. And I have a plant actually on the Idaho-Oregon border. They actually have an old-fashioned one. The technology is about 100 years old. It works. They actually go take the retort and spin that wheel around to pressurize it.
Manually? Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because labor's cheap. But today, most retorts are done, even batch retorts, are done by a robot. And there's a whole cart, the whole train, the door opens up automatically,
shoots it in.
Like there's like four or five baskets that go in, seals it, and then a robot moves on to the next one. Obviously, much more efficient that way. But the point is, it goes in, it's sealed, and it's cooked with steam. There's another type of retort, which is only the really big companies have this. It's called a continuous feed autoclave. Continuous feed retort, or continuous feed hydrostatic retort. And what a hydrostatic retort is has hundreds of thousands of cans at a time. It goes in this big chain through a water leg.
Which means, what is that?
There's steam in the middle. There's different chambers. So steam, obviously, is under pressure. The cooking section is the steam section. The water on both sides is to make it heavier than the steam, that the steam shouldn't blow out of the, keeps it contained. So the cans
and that makes it
through.
That makes it hotter? Does that make it?
No, it doesn't make it hotter. It just makes that the steam is contained.
More
because it's not under pressure. You know, when you have just the steam in one batch retort, so all the steam there, it's being held in place by the metal. Here, the steam has to be held in place because steam is always looking to
blow out. So it cooks faster. It cooks faster that way.
In the steam, it cooks faster because it goes up to like 280 degrees. But the water is there to hold it in place. That goes through in this the in leg and the out leg. Then I'm saying first the in leg, then the in feed, then it goes through another. These are about six stories high. You drive up to a plant. I have one in Tennessee. You drive up there. It looks like this smoke billowing out the top, this big building. Eventually, there's no, okay, that is a hydrostatic retort. So when you have, there's a lot of interesting halacha shalos that come out from a retort. First of all, it goes through, some plants can even have a double chain. So you can have your canned corn, which is like, what can be wrong with corn? Yeah, but it might be shearing
the steam?
The steam, not just the steam, it can actually be in the water. The water is also hot. Be going into the steam and actually be shearing a chain.
With another product that may not be kosher.
Right, not be kosher.
So we're talking about blias, Shiloh blias going.
In a clearation, because that water is cooked. It's like they're shearing, blias passed through the shaft, the taz, inside the base, et cetera. So retorts, one interesting thing, which one of our experts, discovered is that we have a plant that does pork and beans. So of course they kasher, we don't certify the pork and beans. We kasher it and then we just certify the beans. Discovered that in one of these retorts, the pressure cooling section, that means that water, after it's cooked, they have to cool down those cans. So water gets douse, you know, the water sprays on the cans, makes the cans cold, and in turn the water gets hot.
Mm-hmm.
So that water has to be cooled off. So they came up with an ingenious arrangement that water coming into the plant, which is going to be used for the sauce, it's called city water, regular water, you put on, open up a tap, coming from the city, it's ambient, which means in kashrus term, in plant terminology, just means it's room temperature, ambient.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to get that hot, and they want to get this water cold. So it runs against, it doesn't touch each other, but it runs against, called a heat exchanger, and it heat passes from one to the other, and it cools it off.
Uh-huh.
A heat exchanger is actually off topic a little bit. There's an ethanol plant in Nebraska that I was by. So ethanol is made just very much bekitzer. It's made from the corn. So it goes through first a hydroheater with water, with the enzyme to make it very hot and to start the alpha amylase, to start acting on the sugar, to start breaking it down. Then it goes to be fermented in a beer. In a beer can be 750,000 gallon tank, a few of them. So it has to be cooled off to go into the beer. Then from beer, if it's fermented, it has to go for distillation to make it, to make the, without going through what, how it gets distilled and distilled, it has to get hot again.
Mm-hmm.
So a little heat exchanger coming from hydroheater to the beer, it has to be cooled. And from beer to the still, it has to be hot. That little heat exchanger saved the plant $6 million a year in utilities.
Really?
Just by having them cross. Cool down and heat up. So
very interesting.
Fascinating topic, heat exchangers. In this case,
so as a general rule, when you have a cross exchanging heat in such a case where you have kosher and non-kosher, I imagine it's a problem, right?
It's a problem. Problem. Yeah.
So you have to kosher in between, or. What do you typically do?
We typically the OU is going to flush. We don't kasher the boiler.
Oh, okay.
It's a technical discussion, not for now, based on a prima gadim, when we say chanan, but not for this forum. But in this case, of course, we have to kasher. We couldn't do it at those temperatures. We had to lower it to
at a lower temperature.
That it shouldn't be any bilius.
Mm-hmm. Very
so interesting. That's the general parish of a retort. There are many different concerns with the retort. For example, even take pork and beans. If you take pork, how much pork actually goes into the bean can? Not very much.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a concept called chanan,
right?
Saying yeshiva chanan.
Hatichanas nevela, which means tell our viewers
that,
what it means.
If, let's say you have, for example, a 59 ounce container of orange juice. Let's say you have milk in there, and a schnapps cup of chicken soup gets poured into there, so it's not bottled because you need 60 times the amount to your bottle. This comes in a drop below that. It's only 59 times the amount. So if you would not say chatichanas nevela, let's say that orange juice container falls into something else,
right,
a few gallons. If you don't say chatichanas nevela, all you have to mevatel is that one ounce.
It's a small amount.
It's bottled. Once they chatich anas nevela, the oranges itself now is bought. Is,
the whole,
is
the whole thing becomes
and
problematic.
And then you have to have shishim connected there. So in a pork and beans plant, maybe the pork is very small, but then the can becomes also through chanan. And then once it goes, the sauce becomes also. And then that goes into the retort that's going to assa the whole retort. So you end up with a lot. Cascading, you know,
right.
It's exponentially assaing mm-hmm. everything. And that's why you have to have an expert mashgiach go into this plant to make sure that everything is done properly, cash it properly.
Right, like we always say, you know, you can't just walk into a place and, everything, the ingredients are kosher, the tube that it's going through is kosher. You really have to know the structure of such a facility. Any final thoughts on this?
Because
I know you mentioned me before, we were talking about acidic fruits and vegetables.
Not fruits with Masnagdish.
Yeah, correct. Correct. We're talking about high acid fruits and vegetables, which very often will be self-preserve. Talk about that and its ramifications as far as kashrus is concerned.
Right. So we know that, for example, corn, beans, it's low acid. It goes into tomatoes. Tomatoes, I'm not sure about the acidity, but let's say watermelon, bananas, low acid, and it has to be. We know it has to go through a kill step, like we say, to be heated to kill the pathogens. And that we know it is going to be halachic shalos, like we discussed. High acid fruits
would be peaches,
pineapple. So the pineapple, the fruit itself has enough acid in it, and the sauce has enough acid that there is a thought that you're not going to need to do any kill step because the acid itself acts as a kill step. For example, vinegar, which is acetic acid, there's enough vinegar in there. Vinegar plants don't have a cleaning step because that vinegar is used as mm-hmm. a cleanser. So if there's enough acid, but I don't believe, it's not our, I'm almost 100% positive in this, there's not enough acid in most of these fruits to act as a kill step. So it does need to go through, you know, they put in the potassium sorbate or sodium benzoate.
Which are preservatives.
Preservatives. But even with that, it has to still go through a heat treatment.
What's the relevant of the acidic level to kashrus?
Precisely. If it's a high acid, then you can be pretty confident that it didn't go through. Those ingredients are all kosher, and it's high
So you're
high
saying
acid,
about you're talking about buying it off the shelf without ashgacha?
You know, of course, it's always ideal to buy.
So canned, what would that be? Canned oranges, because
oranges have high acid.
Right. If there's such a
pears,
let's say
peaches,
people very often buy the little orange tidbits like that. You could buy that without ashgacha?
No, so there's a few things you have to do. So I don't want to just not to try this at home. You know, speaking theory.
More theory, okay.
First of all, you have to check the ingredients. And not always if there's flavors in there that could be, you don't know what
flavors, additives, things like that.
It can be a concern.
Okay.
We're talking just, let's say, for example, just pineapples and syrup. Now, a lot of times, there's one trick that they use. They say natural, it has to be all natural syrup.
Right.
But they don't want to put sugar in or high fructose corn syrup. So they just put in white grape juice. White grape juice.
And that won't appear on the ingredient panel?
It usually would. So that's something which you can't always assume that pineapples are, it's going to be kosher, because a lot of times they'll use grape juice as a sweetener, white grape juice, which wouldn't be kosher, stam yenum. But let's say you know for sure, you can trust the ingredient level, the ingredient list, and you know that it's not going to be, ingredients are fine. The issue is that if it's in a can, it usually goes through
a retort. Went through a retort. That's the bottom
Even
line.
A fruit cup. It doesn't go through. See, a fruit cup can't go through a steam retort. Glass bottles, for example, are also retorted. I had a company in Spain that I was by. They don't go. It's a glass bottle. If it goes through steam, the volatility of the steam will cause the glass to break.
To break, right?
So what you do is it goes through a retort. The steam goes into the bottom of the retort and it heats up water, and the water sprays around the continuous spray.
It's like a more gentle way of doing it to protect the glass.
But either way, it's over yatsiledes. You have issues. Even the fruit cup of plastic is going to be a spray retort.
Interesting.
And you have, now again, can I raise my right hand and say it's for sure treif? You know, chanan, let's say you don't say chanan, the Ramo, you don't say chanan belach belach, hesem rugo, you don't say hesem rabonim of lach belach. There might be etzes, you know, but we believe in kasha without compromise.
Right.
With the hechsher.
So basically,
if you're stuck in some desert island somewhere with only kosher ingredients, then you can
summarize this conversation, first of all, everyone should try to buy canned vegetables and canned fruit with ashgacha, obviously. That would be highly recommended. But I think the takeaway from this conversation is that you could go into a supermarket and see canned vegetables or canned fruits on a shelf. All the ingredients are kosher. Everything looks good. But what you as the consumer may not know is that this can or container went through a retort, and we don't know the kashrus concerns that were in that retort. That's the takeaway here.
Right.
And that's why
maybe real kashrus might be nothing.
Right. So, you know, once again, it's so enlightening to speak to someone like you and learn about this, because once again, the lesson is you can't take anything for granted and you can't make assumptions. I think people, including myself, we very often make assumptions about things.
Or
we see something.
Just politics.
Yeah, exactly. Or maybe it's just a chumrah, very extreme chumrah over here. We have a real, real kashrus concern. And if you don't know, then you don't know what you don't know. So it's very important to be educated on this. And once again, a fascinating topic that you've brought to the table here. So any final words on this? We covered everything.
I think we covered everything. Okay. Just in general, not just when it comes to these high acid fruits. In general, a person should always buy something with reliable hechsher.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to say, well, the hechsher is not reliable, but for this, like, what can be wrong with it?
Right. You hear that often. You hear people say on orange juice or on canned fruit and vegetables, maybe I don't need as good of a hashgacha, so to speak.
Because of the nature of the beast, most of the, you know, it's expensive to ship things around the country. So a lot of these big oranges companies will just rent out space by different bottling facilities nearer to their to the market where they want to sell.
Is that right? Even brand name
brand name oranges. Yeah, they'll bottle different places because it's just more economical
cheaper
that way. Instead of trucking something from
across country,
you might as well have a plant somewhere else, of course. And those plants can actually do grape juice, can do trefa things, and then cashew.
So that's what you have to. Those are shared facilities. You have to basically check it out. Right. Very interesting. Okay.
A pleasure being here as always.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.